Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, May 16th, 2022, live to be rebroadcast Wednesday, May 18th, 2022 on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. I wanted to remind you again about the conference about Lyme disease and tick-borne illness that's happening this weekend. Here's the information I got from Mariah Hinchy, ND, and Dow Vitality, her naturopathic practice in Hebron, Connecticut, who are sponsoring the conference. The first Lyme Bite Symposium is happening May 21st and 22nd at Mohegan Sun Casino, Uncasville, Connecticut. Lectures will be given by 16 live experts in various fields. There will be 15 industry experts in testing and treatment. Two healthy gluten and dairy-free lunches will be served at the event. There will be nonprofit treatment grants available. This event is hosted by Dow Center for Vitality, benefiting Lyme Warrior, a patient-focused nonprofit. Lyme Bites 2022 will offer attendees a deep dive and the skills necessary to support families affected by Lyme disease. There will be a panel of renowned physicians and researchers bringing a comprehensive experience to all attendees. Presenters will be Dr. Joseph Burriscano, a pioneer in proper Lyme diagnosis, Dr. Alexis Chesney, naturopathic committee chair for the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, ILADS, and Dr. Nancy O'Hara, physician advisory board member of the Autism Community in Action and the weekend's keynote speaker. Attendees will be offered a great deal of information, including how Lyme disease and other infections play a role in a growing number of neurological and autoimmune diseases. Speakers will discuss the connections between Lyme disease and depression, anxiety, Parkinson's disease, dementia, autism, PANS, and PANDAS. You can learn vital information about Lyme disease as needed to survive and thrive, about prevention, reliable testing for diagnosis, and proven effective natural and integrative treatment strategies. There will also be a discussion on how mycotoxin illnesses, such as mold and fungus, can complicate matters and how to diagnose and treat it. You can visit LymeDiseaseConference.com to register. You can call our office to find out about a discounted student rate at 860-228-1287. That's 860-228-1287. So that's exciting. I'm going to attend, but I'm going to attend virtually, kind of because if I attend virtually and the weather's really nice, I can sit in my yard. And there's some other reasons too. There's some health reasons too. It's good for me to be outside and be calm and relaxed and be home. So that's why I'm doing that. So I'm looking forward to being in my yard and getting some really good information about Lyme disease. Speaking of being in my yard, it's a great thing if you let your lawn go to be a meadow, because then you get lots of species of wildflowers. You get to enjoy an interesting meadow. But the thing that you really need to do is mow. And if you mow your lawn, you're going to keep the grass short and you're going to let the sun get into the grass and it's going to be able to dry out a little bit better and you're going to be less likely to have ticks surviving there. The long, tall, damp grass is a great place for ticks to hang out. So if you haven't mowed your lawn, it's a good idea to do that. And ours is looking kind of...
Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well,
yeah,
I would like to be out in that yard. I want to do yoga in that yard. I want to sit in that yard. I'm definitely going to sit in that yard, and I'm going to have to spray myself with tick spray. So.
We have a slight mower issue, which I'm working on.
Yeah, right. We have a mower issue. It's unfortunate. So, all right. So I was, you heard an encore presentation last week, which was Ron's Bump in the Road, because the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary of Ron's Bump in the Road, his cardiovascular surgery, the 1 year anniversary was a week ago Wednesday, was last Wednesday, May 11th. And so we played the episode, the first episode where I had Ron back and I was able to, I was able to interview him about his experience. So we talked all about cardiovascular health. We had several weeks running where we talked about cardiovascular health, appropriately so, right? And so we're really thrilled that Ron is back, that he's well and he's healthy and he's better than healthy. He's riding his bike a lot. He rode his bike to the community center today and then taught spinning and then rode home. So I'm assuming you're not up for any more riding today. And I think
I may ride to the grocery store.
Oh, I think you're not going to do that. And here's why. I'm thinking that later on we need to drive over to the spot in Mansfield Hollow so we can walk and get the lilacs because the lilacs are blooming.
Okay.
And we'll go get the lilacs. And then after we're done, we'll go to Aldi's. What do you think?
Okay. I was going to ride my bike there too, but that's okay.
Or you could ride your bike earlier.
Either way, it doesn't matter. We can drive.
You'll see if you have time. I'm not riding my bike to Aldi's.
I'm trying not to gobble Putin's gasoline.
All right. Well, in any case, we're going to go get some lilacs today.
Right. Exactly.
Yes, because the lilacs are blooming, and it's always a great thing to take advantage of when flowers are blooming and enjoy them. We have an azalea rhodiola mix in our yard, and I frequently go visit my mother. You know, since 2016, I go visit my mother around on Mother's Day week, and I usually leave on the Saturday, the day before Mother's Day, and I stay for a week, and that's the week that bush peaks. So it was pretty much peaking when I left, so I got some good photos of it, but now that it's back, the flowers are all falling off. Oh well. So I'll have to enjoy other flowers. I just really try to enjoy any flower that I can as soon as I see it, because I just have a thing for flowers. Flowers are great, especially wildflowers, flowers that just grow there. Wildflowers are my favorite, followed by beautiful flowers that have been grown in yards, followed by cut flowers that are in my house. But I mean, cut wildflowers in my house, that's a nice thing too. So anyway, we'll work on that.
Okay.
But I love going out to seek wildflowers, and I have a walk that I do every year. When I go into Mansfield Hollow, there's a place in Mansfield Hollow where there's sneezeweed growing. So, and that grows in July. It usually grows in the middle of the summer in July. Mm. And it's just such a cute plant. It looks sort of like a brown-eyed Susan, but with long hair. Like instead of having full petals, it has little hairy kind of petals that are that beautiful orange-yellow shade. And with a little bulb that sticks in the center, sort of sticks up, and they're just adorable. So I go and I look at them in the swampy area, this particular swampy area in Mansfield Hollow. I love to do that. So since I just came back from the Sunshine State, I'm feeling a fair bit better. I wanted to talk about how specific kinds of nature are good for you. The warm sunshine really did me a lot of good, and it's not just because sunshine makes you feel bright and cheery in a general way. There are some real scientific reasons why it's good for you. So why on earth is sunshine good for you? It's not all bad. Of course, when you think of the sun, you're thinking about, you know, getting a sunburn and the damage that it can do. But small amounts, especially if you go early in the day before it's at its brightest, can be good for you. How much is enough? It depends on each person. It depends on your skin tone, your age, your health history, your diet, where you live. Generally, scientists think 5 to 15 minutes, or even up to 30 if you're dark-skinned, is about right to get the most out of it without causing any health problems. That means that amount of time with no sunscreen on. So you can try to decide what's right for you. The sun obviously helps you to make vitamin D. Vitamin D is actually a hormone, and vitamin D is helpful for mineral metabolism. It's helpful for preventing rickets, which is part of it, because vitamin D puts minerals into your bones, it will help you prevent you from getting rickets. That means when your bones are porous and they don't hold up well. Vitamin D risks your if you don't have enough vitamin D, you can have an increased risk of various kinds of cancers. And also illnesses such as multiple sclerosis and other autoimmune diseases tend to be higher in northern climates because we don't get as much vitamin D naturally. You sleep better if you get sunshine. You need light to help you wake up in the morning, and you need the light to go down when you go to bed at night to have a proper circadian cycle. And as you age, that becomes more important because your eyes are it's not as easy to take in light. So having real natural sunlight in the morning and having it go down at night is more important. Morning light can help you lose weight and be at a better weight. 20 to 30 minutes between 8 a.m. and noon seems to help. The earlier you get it, the better. And it may be very directly that the sun helps to shrink fat cells below your surface. So sunbathe, that's a way that sunbathing is actually good for you. So if you're going to do that, you want to make sure you're wearing SPF if you're going to be out for more than 5 to 15 minutes, longer if you have darker skin. But being in the sun can actually help to shrink some fat cells. It obviously, it's good for your emotional well-being. It increases serotonin, a neurotransmitter in your brain that helps you with mood and helps to treat seasonal affective disorder. And it's good for your actual eye health. It makes you less likely to have nearsightedness. Obviously, too much direct sunlight can hurt your eyes and lead to blurred vision and increased cataracts because of oxidative damage. So melanoma, basal cell carcinoma, and squamous cell carcinoma can be caused by too much time in the sun. So you have to cover up to if you're going to be outside longer than 15 minutes. But regular small amounts of ultraviolet light can actually help to prevent and treat eczema, psoriasis, and vitiligo. So vitiligo is a condition where you have depigmentation of the skin, where you have white patches on your skin. Filtered sunlight can be used to treat jaundice that affects newborns, and they give ultraviolet to help to break down the extra bilirubin in baby skin. You can put the baby in sunlight behind a window to filter out more harmful kinds of rays, but you don't put the baby in direct sunlight. You shouldn't get too much sun, because then your skin, aside from just from getting skin cancer, it does cause oxidative damage and will give you more wrinkles. You know, people who spend a lot of the time in the sun, Ron uses a term, he says people look weathered. And that's because the sunlight causes oxidative damage. It breaks down collagen and it gives you more wrinkles. And so when you have, when you're sunburned, you're sending white blood cells from your immune system in your skin, and it's an inflammatory state. So if you are trying to fight off other infections, that can be a bad thing. So it's a good idea not to get sunburned. You want to protect your eyes. I was very pleased because I had an ophthalmologist appointment a couple of years ago, and my ophthalmologist said, hey, you are defying age because you have no evidence of any cataracts at all in your 50, whatever year it was, 56, 57 years old. I'm 58 now. And so far, so good. And that's for a couple of reasons. I eat a lot of antioxidants. I do take lutein and zeaxanthin every day. And that's a great antioxidant that helps protect your eyes. And I do eat a lot of leafy greens. And I take vitamin C and vitamin A. And when I'm outside for long periods of time, I wear eye protection. So the time that I'm outside the most is when I'm on my bike, and all of my eyewear has eye protection in it. So it has UV protection. So if you are going to be outside for a long period of time, it's a good idea to be wearing glasses that have UV protection. It will protect your eyes from aging, and it will protect the area around your eyes from aging as well, to an extent. I mean, I like to use eye cream too, but that is something that you can do. And wearing eye protection is a really good idea. So use sunscreen. You want to use at least 15 SPF or higher, and you want to put it on. It's a good idea to put it on half an hour before you go outside. If not, put it on right when you get outside and reapply. Look at the bottle, see how often it recommends reapplying, and then do it. The other thing that I learned the hard way this time, I had a bottle of sunscreen that I've been working off of for a couple of years, and I got a sunburn the first day I was in the sun when I was in Florida. So I said, you know what? I think this sunscreen is a couple of years old. I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to buy some new sunscreen. So I did, and I got a nice SPF 50 that was brand new and fresh, and it worked. So, you know, when they say that, you know, you might be able to get away with using the same bottle 2 years in a row, but you might not. If you're up to year three of the same bottle, you might want to toss it if there's still sunscreen in it. Tanning beds, not necessarily good for you. There are some people go to tanning beds for specific reasons. Like I have a scientist colleague who does go to tanning beds twice a week in the season where you can't get a lot of good sunshine, because he gets eczema, and he finds that going into the tanning beds for 5 to 15 minutes twice a week in the dark time of year helps him to prevent eczema. And that's what they recommend, 15 minutes or less. But you only do that in the time of year when you really can't be outside, or you know, can't be outside uncovered and the sun is low. So from that in Connecticut, that would be from say September to March. And certainly when the sun is setting low and the sun is sitting low in the sky, you can do the tanning bed thing. It's a good idea to go to the dermatologist, and you should check your own skin once a month or so. And you can also get a family member to look at places where that you can't see and look for any new lesions or growths or spots, and see if there are any changes in any spots. And then, especially if you have a family history or just anyway, it's a good idea to take up with a dermatologist. Go to a dermatologist and get a full body check. And that's something I haven't done and I probably should do. So, so there you go. So there's some ways that the sun can help you. So sunlight is very good for you. So let's look at directly. Yes, go ahead.
A question for you. Does the tanning booth have the same properties as the real sun?
That is a good question. I'm going to go with probably, is it 100% full spectrum mimicking the sun? I don't know the answer to that, and I doubt it. I'm not sure if it has more UVA or UVB in it. I'm going to go with probably not.
Okay.
That going in a tanning bed is going to, they're going to tone it down a little bit. I mean, it is intended for you to tan, so it does have ultraviolet light in it, but does it have all the same properties as the sun? Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all right, let's look at how the sun helps your thyroid. So sunshine can help your thyroid to work. Getting out in the sun, once again, because if you get out in the sun 15 to 20 minutes a day, and it does help you increase your vitamin D, and you know that you can't overdose. When you are making vitamin D from sunlight, you're not going to overdose on it. You can overdose on it when you take it orally, but when you get sunlight, your body moderates the amount of vitamin D that you make from actual sunshine. But vitamin D can help to moderate your thyroid. Helps you if you have Hashimoto's or if you have just any thyroid condition. Also helps your circadian cycle, and it helps other hormones. It helps your cortisol. Cortisol and melatonin interact with thyroid production. It's not entirely clear exactly how it does that. But if you are too stressed out and you have too much cortisol around, you'll have a difficult time converting your T4 to T3, which is the active form of thyroid hormone. So that's really interesting. So you know that your thyroid gland is responsible for producing T4. Then T4 is released into the greater circulation. T4 is not nearly as potent as T3, which is very smart. That's one of those situations where your body goes, well, I'm going to have the predominant hormone be the one that's not as potent, because you don't want thyroid receptors to be overstimulated because it makes you overstimulated. So your body regulates how much T3 it makes. T3 is the more active thyroid hormone. And so that's converted by thyroid peroxidase enzyme in the periphery outside of the thyroid gland. Now, if you are totally stressed out, you're making a lot of cortisol from your adrenals. So if you have too much cortisol around, cortisol suppresses the conversion of T4 to T3. So if you're stressed out, you're going to reduce the functioning of your thyroid hormone. So doing things like relaxing, taking naps, doing yoga, doing yin yoga, qigong, resting, other restorative activities, prayer, anything that takes you out of that fight or flight and puts you into rest and digest is going to improve your thyroid function by lowering cortisol and improving your ability to convert your T4 to T3. So the more stressed out you are, now if you're hypothyroid and you're taking Synthroid, if you're taking levothyroxine, some brand of levothyroxine, right? Levothyroxine is just T4. You put that in your body and you need to be able to convert that T4, even though you're taking it orally. You need to be able to convert that T4 to T3. Sometimes people are given T3 additionally to take. Usually they're not, because the assumption is that most people do a good job of converting their T4 to T3. That is not necessarily true. You have to have adequate zinc and adequate selenium in order to be able to do that. And you also have to have low enough cortisol. If you're not sleeping well, if you're very stressed out, if you're very upset, got something going on in your life, if you're going full tilt all day, you're not going to be able, if you're taking a thyroid medicine, you need to be able to convert that T4 to T3. So the best thing to do is to rest more, to do less stuff. If it's hard for you to do less stuff, it's good to have some restorative activities in your life, whether it's meditation, yoga, qigong, prayer, taking naps, knitting, crafts, spending time with friends, laughter, reading, whatever it is for you, any kind of restorative activity. It's not just, oh, it's good for you because it's a good thing for your health. It's specifically good for certain, it's a treatment for various health conditions. Resting is a treatment for hypothyroidism. Resting is a treatment for stress. Resting is a treatment for autoimmune conditions. Resting is a treatment, you name it, any condition that you have, is resting is a treatment for it, because it puts you into rest and digest, and it makes it so that your immune system is more available to work on whatever it is you're working on. So rest. So getting sunlight also helps you to sleep better, and it helps you to sleep better because you have that good T4 to T3 and you're not extra tired, and it helps you to make adequate melatonin, which helps you with sleep. All right. The sun helps your mood. So that there's a shock. Sun is good for your mood. Again, it's because of the vitamin D. We know that it's helpful for your mood. Sunny disposition, it helps with seasonal affective disorder. It helps with your sleep and your bones. The sun can also help to lower your blood pressure. Your body, when sunlight hits your skin, you release more nitric oxide. That's interesting. So nitric oxide is something that dilates your blood vessels. And when your blood vessels are more relaxed and dilated, you have a larger area for blood volume to go through. So imagine if blood is going through a lumen, it's going through a tube that's 1 millimeter wide, it's going to go through at a higher pressure than if the same volume of blood is going through a tube that's 5 millimeters wide. So when you have nitric oxide going through, it widens the lumen, the inside of your blood vessels, that tube. And so you have the same volume of blood going through a much wider tube, so your pressure goes down. So you can get that from being out in the sun. So sunshine, another way that sunshine is good for you. Who knew? That may be one of the reasons I'm attracted to being outside. All right. So now let's do specific nature. Why specific natural phenomena are good for you. So here's a shout out to my friend Diane Verga. The nature I'm going to talk about is the...
I don't know.
What is Diane Verga like?
She likes cats.
Yes, she does like cats, but there's a specific nature that she likes. The place she likes to go all the time.
Oh, the beach.
Yes.
Yeah, the beach.
Indeed. So when I go to Florida, Diane Verga gets at least one text of wherever I'm at, and she's always excited to get them, and she always asks me, did you get in the water? How was the water? And then she'll text me back with her pictures of Waterford Beach, mm-hmm. and it's a nice exchange that we have. And once in a while, we do get to go to the beach together because we just love the beach. So what's the deal with the beach? The beach is calming. Now,
got me.
I'm right, and you're not a beach person, and it's, I don't know if it's because you're an old Yankee or it's just, part of it is the old Yankee thing, but there are old Yankees who love to go to the beach. I think it's just, in your case, it's just one of the points I'm going to make today is that everybody is different, and when we were studying homeopathy back in school, we studied about how various homeopathic archetypes preferred different forms of nature, like tuberculinum or people in the tubercular miasm. They love to go. Well, I shouldn't say that, because homeopathic phosphorus, we love to go to the beach. If you're homeopathic tuberculinum, you probably want to go to the mountains. Homeopathic metarhinum also likes to go to the beach. There are other archetypes that like to go into the forest. And never mind about homeopathic remedies. There are various people archetypally and personally prefer different nature. Like when they really need to de-stress, they're headed for the mountains. They've got a cabin up in New Hampshire. Other people, they've got a cottage at the Cape, or they just like to go to the beach, and that would be me. And some people love to go in the woods, and that calms them. And it doesn't matter if it's at a high elevation or not, they just love the woods. And some people feel better in the desert, and they enjoy the desert because it's arid and it's not humid, and that helps them. So it really depends on the person. It depends on your constitution, what tends to help you. If you tend to be have a damp constitution, you might do better in the desert. If you The Constitution, I'm not sure what the Constitution is that likes the beach, and it might be Ayurvedic Pitta, that where you have a fiery disposition, you like the sunshine and you like the water, that combination there. So the beach, here's a resource. I'm looking at a resource from the University of New Hampshire, and they talk about how the beach can immediately relieve your stress because the waves and sun combined is actually calming. The heat of the sun helps, and the sound of the waves and feet in the sand, all of that can help reduce anxiety and stress. And most people sleep better after they've been at the beach. So when there, this is suggesting there are three main factors that inhibit a person's sleep: somebody being stressed, not being physically tired, and hormone imbalances. So that's really, I've never heard it stated that succinctly. So let me say that again. Things that help prevent you from sleeping: stress, not being physically tired, and hormone imbalances. So the beach can help to relieve stress, regulate your hormones, and give you exercise that you need to feel tired. So if you're not physically active, it's going to be harder for you to sleep. Obviously, you can get vitamin D. As little as 10 minutes in the sun, you can get an entire day's worth of vitamin D. The vitamin D you absorb through your day at the beach will be stored in your body and used later. You can exercise, you can walk in the sand, you can go for a jog, you can go swimming, you can go, when it was very windy, it was interesting because I was at the Gulf, on the Gulf of Mexico, because my mom lives in Venice, and some days when there was no wind, it was very calm. It's almost like being on a lake. There's barely any waves at all. I wouldn't say there's no waves because the Gulf of Mexico is large and it ultimately empties into the Atlantic, but where it empties into the Atlantic is far away, and it's far away enough that the water is very calm. And so there's very gentle waves when it's a still day. But if it's very windy, you get waves like you're in Westerly. And that happened, I think it was Thursday. We had an incredibly windy day, and I went in there and I was jumping waves like I was in Rhode Island. It was incredible. And there was some rain coming, and it did in fact rain that night. So, but the wind was just incredible. And I did ride my bike that day, and it was pretty windy that day. I went out to Manasota Key, and there was some wind there. Your skin tends to look better. The sand exfoliates your skin. And if you want to do some exfoliation, you can sit in a sandy spot and you can take the sand. What I like to do is sit at the water's edge, especially if it's hot, because otherwise the sand's going to be hot. And I'll take the wet sand and I'll scrub my feet. I might scrub my legs. I might scrub other parts, you know, scrub my arms, and just use the sand to do that, and then go in the water. And then when I get home, do some moisturizing, and it's really nice. The salt water detoxifies your pores when the sun opens them up, and iodine in the water is antimicrobial. So it can help you with, if you have any blemishes, if you have acne, stuff like that, and you want to use sunscreen. So those are some basic ways, according to the University of New Hampshire. New Hampshire does have a coast. I mean, water's kind of cold there, but it does have a coast, not a very big coast because not very long, but, and I think I can recite all of the towns on the New Hampshire. I could at one time. It starts with Seabrook, then it goes to Rye, and then it goes to Northampton, and maybe Hampton, and then Northampton. I don't know if there's Northampton. And then Portsmouth, yeah. And that's it. I think that's all of them. And then you're in Kittery, right? Portsmouth borders on Kittery, Maine. Okay. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
So anyway, but definitely people go to the New Hampshire coast. But people who go to New Hampshire, they like to go to the coast, but they also often go inland. There's that big old Lake Winnipesaukee. Have you been to Lake Winnipesaukee?
Yep.
Is it nice?
It's big.
Big. Does it look like it's very long? That would be a fun place to go.
It's a long thing, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of things about Lake Winnipesaukee. There's a whole bunch of communities around it.
Yeah.
And then there was years ago when they discontinued doing the Plymouth to Provincetown Cape Cod relay race, the running race, they did it around Lake Winnipesaukee.
So can you ride your bike around Lake Winnipesaukee?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you don't mind being in lots of traffic all the time.
Oh, really?
It's a tourist trap.
Oh.
It's, well, you know, I mean, there are remote parts of Lake Lake Winnipesaukee, but it's pretty much a big lake in the middle of New Hampshire that attracts a lot of tourism.
I see.
So a lot of people from Boston go up there. You know, yeah. It's just, you know.
Not only Boston. I have a friend who lives in New York, in the city, in Manhattan, and she goes to Lake Winnipesaukee.
So, you know, it's kind of a typical trap.
Oh. Okay. All right. Here's some more 10 reasons why the beach is healthy. So I'm focusing on the beach because I love the beach. So let's see what this says. It's good for your joints and skin. I really wanted to try to get my mother to the beach and have her soak in the salt water, but she said she would do it, but then she didn't want to. But fortunately, I did get her to go into the pool at her in her complex. I think there's something besides chlorine in that water. I don't know if there's salt in the water or it could be bromine because it wasn't very I think there was some chlorine, but there was something else too. And my mom reported that she felt really good going in that water. So I'm wondering if they put some salt in addition to the chlorine or whatever is in there. And all we did was we went in there and they had noodles and they had these little floaty seats. And we just floated around in the water, and she really enjoyed it.
How did you like it?
I enjoyed it, too, because I got to be in the water with her. It was fun. I enjoyed, you know, floating around on the floaties. It was very relaxing. We would sit on the side. There were chaise there, and you could sit in the chaise and relax and then go in the water. And it was just great to get my mom in the water. And she liked it so much because if she likes it, she's going to do it again. We went 3 times, which is a big deal. And I was there 6 full days. And three of those days we went. And there was one day it was like, you want to go? And she didn't want to go. But we went 3 of the days. And because I still had my bathing suit on those 3 days, I hopped in my car and went to the beach right after. Because I could do that because the beach is so close. You don't feel bad. Like when you live in New Jersey, it's a big deal. It's an all-day affair to go to the beach. And, you know, you get yourself ready. You have to get in traffic. You have to get there. And you get there as early as you can. When I'm in Venice, you know, I'll go. You can go any time of day. You know, you can go 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The sun's still really bright, still really warm out. You can go for half an hour and you don't feel like you missed anything because you can go back tomorrow. It's not a big deal. So soaking in salt water is really good for your muscles and your joints. The ocean can help heal little nicks and cuts and scrapes with the iodine that's in the water and the salt that's in the water. And remember, you should reapply your sunscreen. And I think because there's an osmotic effect, the water has a higher level of salt that's in your body. It's going to draw inflammation out of your body in general. You can also go for a walk. Walking on the beach is good for you because it's an uneven surface. It's not a hard surface, so you have to stabilize yourself if you're walking in it. One of the things I like to do is recommend that people either, if you can walk in the sand, of course, if you're walking barefoot in the sand and it's hot, you have to wear shoes. So if you need, but still, even if you have to wear shoes and you're walking in the dry sand, it's a great stabilizing exercise for your ankles, your knees, your hips, your entire legs because you have to stabilize yourself because the sand is kind of an uneven surface. You can also take your shoes off and walk at the water's edge. And I like that because then you can go barefoot because it's not going to be so hot. And then if there's any fungal elements on your feet, it's going to help to clean those out because you're going to get the water washing over your feet and you're exfoliating by walking in the sand. And again, you're going to get that uneven surface and you're going to get the balancing exercises and you're going to be strengthening ligaments and tendons. And, you know, so walking on the beach is really nice also because you have the waves there and you have the ocean and you have the sound of the waves and I don't want to say everybody, but you know, when I take pictures of the ocean and I post them on Facebook, people go, "Oh, so beautiful." Most people think that the ocean is beautiful. It really kind of is. And there's something very soothing about it. It is, of course, mother from which we have emanated. I mean, we came from water. We came from the ocean and we evolved out of it. You can do a body check and as you can put on your sunblock, you can pay attention to your skin, look for anything you might not notice, see how your joints feel, see if there's anything that's sore. Just check over yourself and see if there's anything going on in your body and check out. You can detox from tech, put aside your, and I don't do this enough. I mean, I do bring my cell phone to the beach in part so I can take pictures. But you can put your tech down and just take a rest. Maybe read a book that's made from paper or a magazine, or just lie there and stare at stuff and people watch. When you go to the beach, I don't know if it's all of Florida, but definitely the part of Florida that I go to, there's always Eastern Europeans there. And I had a funny experience. I was in the water and a very pleasant looking lady came over to me. She must have thought I looked Eastern European, which I am. And she started talking to me and she was hoping she could chat with me.
And she couldn't speak her language.
She spoke, she said she was from Bielorussia. She was Belarusian.
Mm.
And so I tried to talk with her and we laughed a little bit, but she didn't speak any English and I didn't speak any Belarusian. I said, Bielorussia? She said, da. And I said, oh, da. And yet, that I understand. So apparently Belarusian has some commonalities with regular Russian. So anyway, in that part of Florida, there are Russians and Ukrainians and apparently Belarusians as well. And I don't know if it's just they all congregated there. Part of it is they like to go there. And part of it is in the town of Northport, there's warm mineral springs. And people from Eastern Europe believe in taking the waters for health. And they actually formed a community near warm mineral springs so that they could regularly do that. It's really interesting. And so when you go in the water, if you go at a time of year when there's not a lot of people in the water, and I have to say, there weren't a lot of people in the water because the water temperature was probably a bit cool for a lot of people. It wasn't cool like the sound. It was probably in the high 70s, low 80s. Maybe it was just 80 degrees, which, you know, when you go to the Mansfield Community Center, go for a swim, the water temperature is usually around 80, maybe slightly more, sometimes slightly less, but usually around 80. So when you get in, it feels pretty good, especially if it's hot out. But not everybody wants to go in at that temperature. And I have to say, there were way more people out of the water than in it. But the ones who were in it, if you see people in the water, when there's not a lot of people in it, some of them are going to be either Russian or Ukrainian or Belarusian. That's something I learned. And so I'm in there and there are people speaking Russian and they're very happy to be there. And, you know, families come and all ages and it's great. It's really nice. And so they know that they just believe in culturally, they believe in the benefit of that kind of detox. And I do too. It works for me. It's a great place for a nap. Just use your sunscreen if you fall asleep. It's so soothing to be on the beach. It's nice and warm and you can put on your sunscreen and you can listen to the waves. It's really lovely. And so when if you're sleep deprived, it messes up your the hormones that help regulate sleep and also the hormones that regulate hunger. And it will help to sort all that stuff out. Also, if you're having issues with your libido, it can help you with that too. When your senses are stimulated and you're more relaxed and you're unplugged, you may feel like your libido is increased. Obviously, we keep talking about the vitamin D over and over. You can totally make vitamin D at the beach because you're in the sunshine. You can also work out at the beach. There's different things you can do at the beach. You can do yoga on the beach, which I did. There's a wonderful woman named Ellen Larson who teaches yoga. She started a whole free yoga on the beach in the town of Venice, Florida. So you can do her yoga. She has a group that teaches it. She teaches herself, and then there's a number of other people who teach yoga for her at various times of day. And you can do yoga on your own. You can take your tablet or phone and follow a yoga flow you can take a virtual class, or you can just go on YouTube or some other service and do pre-recorded yoga flows, or you can just do your own thing. So you can definitely do yoga. You can do any kind of stretching or calisthenic type exercise. You can obviously walk and run. You can also, if it's allowed on the beach, you can go in dune buggies, depending on the, don't do it unless you know that that beach is permits that. And you can also ride a fat bike on the beach, a beach with very fat tires, and it allows you to ride in the sand. Beach is social. You can hang out with people on the beach. It's nice. You can go with your friend Diane, which is what I like to do. You try to get Ron to go. Sometimes he relents and he'll go with me. But mostly, if I can get Ron to go, it's we're not going to be spending a day at the beach. We're going to go for a walk on the beach, and then we're going to go get ice cream, which is something we should do before too long.
Ice cream is good.
Yeah. Then we can go to Westerly and then go to the gelato place afterwards. Right. Yeah.
Then so. You can have all the Italian guys nod to me.
Right. Well, if you go, right. Yes, because they look at you and they go, yep, he's, well, we recognize him.
He's one of ours.
Yes.
From our tribe.
Yeah. They don't nod at me like that because I look Jewish. So anyway, so that's the beach. All right. Let's go to the mountains. Mountains is my next thing I wanted to talk about because a lot of people like to go to the mountains. So vacationing in the mountains, the altitude is helpful. It can help you with fat loss. It helps to decrease your appetite, makes you feel more full. And did you know that Colorado holds the nation's lowest obesity rate? Well, anyway, yeah. that changes. But as of this writing and whatever source they're using, that's what they're saying.
Pretty common that it wins.
It's not just because people have easier access to hiking and exercise. It's also altitude. It can decrease your weight just because of how the altitude works for you. I think it may just be because it makes you feel fuller and decreases your appetite. Mountains can help lower cardiovascular disease, and again, it's the altitude. It can help lower the reduced oxygen helps. It causes you to make new blood vessels. You get angiogenesis from being in a low oxygen environment. You have a lower risk of dying from ischemic heart disease because your body makes more collaterals. So women living at high altitudes are less likely to die from heart attacks, and that life at high altitudes can lead to healthier hearts. So we should be going to the mountains. And I think we have to go high enough so that it actually makes a difference. So you're probably looking at least 4,000 feet, definitely mile up.
Yeah.
So when you're in the mountains, you're breathing in oxygen that's free of gases and air pollution. The fresh air can help alleviate respiratory problems. You breathe better, can help your asthma, and it can help you with allergy symptoms. And there's studies that shows that pine, so that traveling through mountains in pine can decrease hostility, depression, and stress. Being in the mountains that makes you happier. Lavender that grows at mountain bases is known to help depression and sleep. If you're feeling down, you can go climbing. And it just climbing gives you its exercise, and it gives you endorphins, and it gives you the benefits of the lower oxygen environment. Of course, it's great for relationships. You can bond when you can support each other when you're huffing and puffing up trails. And you can face acute adversity by talking each other through getting up a mountain. So that's a nice way to do it. Of course, it's gorgeous in the mountains. It's beautiful. I mean, you know, my mountains are not my number one nature, but I do love to go to the mountains. I mean, I prefer the beach, but that doesn't mean I don't like the mountains. Mountains are gorgeous when you see those vistas. They're really terrific. Both Moses and Muhammad spent time in the mountains, and that was part of their spiritual journey. There's sounds, smells, noises, all kinds of things that can help you. You can go to the mountains in any season, too. I mean, because the mountains are beautiful any time of year, whereas the beach is not so much fun when it's cold out. It's very windy. There's not trees, and you're not blocked from the wind, and it can be unpleasant. But if you go to the mountains, especially if the mountains are forested, you can go when it's cold out, and it's still gorgeous, and it's still lovely. And of course, if you ski, you can go skiing or do any kind of snow sports in the mountains. It's also a great experience. You know, it's just really beautiful, and it can be less expensive than going to, say, a theme park. All right, so that's the mountains. Now let's go to the woods. Why woods are good for you. So we have a lot of woods here. The woods is right there. We live in Mansfield Hollow, so I can go to the woods any day of the week because it's literally right there in my backyard. And one of the things is the woods may prevent you from getting cancer. How the heck does it do that? They studied it in Japan, in Tokyo, and they took blood samples from volunteers before they went on a forest expedition, spent 2 or 3 days in the forest, and after they stayed, their blood was taken again for analysis, and it showed an increase in NK cell activity that lasted for a month. Oh, that's going to make me want to go on at least a weekly woods walk. That's incredible. NK cells eat cancer. So if you have cancer, unfortunately, and you can get yourself into the woods, you don't necessarily have to go walking in the woods. You can go sit in a chair and just forest bathe, and you're going to get some increase in NK cells. That's really incredible.
You could be in our yard.
Our yard! I know.
We're kind of in the woods.
We are. Well, the immediate backyard, not so much, but I mean, just down the... I can
show you a spot, which is very nice.
A spot. We'll go in the spot, and just put a chair in there and just sit. All right. Forest scents can reduce stress. And again, they were studying this in Japan. That's wonderful. Kyoto University. They had subjects evaluate their mood and stress level on forest days and on control days. And they found that they were, that their forest days, they felt less stressed out. The explanation was that pine, fir, and cedar and cypress contain phytoncides such as alpha pinene and beta pinene, which make up essential oils of many plants and trees, which reduce cortisol. So if you want to get into some essential oils, stuff that has pine in it can help you. It's these compounds called phytoncides. So if you get pine, fir, cedar, and cypress. All have that alpha pinene, beta pinene, which is calming. So being in the woods can help with depression. There's a shock. This one was studied in London. People living near the woods have better mental health. Surprise, surprise. Being near a tree and looking at a tree and being around a tree, you know, all you tree huggers, right? Tree huggers know something that's good. Hugging a tree is good for you.
Yay,
can make your brain work better. When you walk through a forest or green area, it helps your memory. And in Germany, they have forest kindergartens. And they're starting to happen in the U.S. and the United Kingdom as well. That children play in forest environments are better at a lot of cognitive skills and have better manual dexterity, and they have better risk management. Going for a walk in the woods can lower your blood pressure. That's a good thing. What an easy way to lower your blood pressure. Would you rather take Atenolol or would you like to go walk in the woods? I would like to walk in the woods, please. So we're going to do that today. So one of the health benefits is that forest walks keep your blood pressure down. Again, they studied this in Japan because they do. And they had a control group, and the group that went in the woods had lower blood pressure. If you want to lose weight, the woods can help you do that. So now 30%, at least 30% of the world's population, this might be an older article because I know it's up to more like, well, 30% of the world's population is obese or overweight. I think it's the United States, it's much higher. In the United Kingdom, 67% of males and 57% of females are now overweight. And in the U.S., it's something like 40% of people are, and this may have changed, but 40% of people are obese, and like 70% of people are overweight. You can get back in shape by going in the woods. They're great for reducing loneliness, even if you go by yourself. If you're in the woods, I don't think about the fact that I'm alone or lonely if I'm in the woods. It may be because of the trees. Hey, today when I was on my ride, I saw a fox.
Yeah.
The fox was at the side of the road and then ran in. And I read something about foxes. And people worry that if they see a fox, that the fox could be rabid. This time of year, that's probably not true. Right now, fox moms are, you might see a fox mom near your home, because when the kits are little, when they're really tiny, they feel safer if they're near your house. They feel like predators are not going to come to near your house as likely as they are far out in the woods. So if you see a fox close to your home, uh-huh. and the fox isn't chasing you or doing anything, the fox kind of sees you and then runs off. Let her be. It's probably a mom, and she's protecting her kits. And you probably have a den in your home area, and you'll probably have the den. The den will be in that location. It won't stay there. As the kits get bigger, she's going to move the den further and further away from your house. So don't worry about it, but just enjoy the fact that this fox mom feels safe near your house, and you're helping to support fox health. So I think like a lot of things that are breeding now are doing it now, because I've seen a couple of foxes since I've been home. And I've seen people are posting pictures of turtles that they're encountering. I encountered an enormous gopher tortoise. And gopher tortoises, I think they like the dry patches. They're all over Florida. And we often see them on the rail trail because they cut through the rail trails and it's dry at the side of the road. And they're really placid. They look kind of like snapping turtles, except they're somewhat less jagged and they're really mellow. They see you and they just kind of sit there. They don't even run away. They just kind of sit and hang out. And the one that I took a picture of was eating the weeds that were just, she was just sitting there. And she was just munching on the grass and having a good time. And they're just so placid and peaceful. Somebody posted a picture today of a spotted turtle. And so you might see spotted turtles and painted turtles. And if they're not in the road, you should leave them alone. And if they are in the road and they're intact, or even if they're still alive, just move them to the side of the road. But
unless they're a snapping turtle, then please be careful.
If they're a snapping turtle and you feel brave enough to grab them from behind, you can do that. I would never do that. I would
give them a push with a stick.
Give them a push with a stick, or let them bite the stick and drag them. Or you once herded a baby one with your bike. But don't touch them, because they could bite your finger off.
They will bite you.
And they're aggressive.
And they are.
All the other turtles are not aggressive. They're so cute. No. Yeah, the painted turtles and the spotted turtles. And we had a very special turtle that was sitting on our porch a couple of years ago. And it was a wood turtle. And somebody got very excited when they saw it, because they said, that's very special because they're rare. And it came to visit us and it was nice. We also have a turkey, a tom turkey, that's walking around our yard.
Yeah, we do.
It's decided that it's his territory. It's a wild tom turkey, and he's really majestic, very beautiful, all different colors. He's a little noisy, yeah. So I don't know if he's looking for a mate or he's got kids and they're, you know, he's walking around and his wife is protecting the baby somewhere.
Oh.
I'm thinking it's the latter. All right. So that's the woods. So exposure to forest strengthens our immune system, reduces blood pressure, increases energy, boosts our mood, and helps us regain and maintain our focus in ways that treeless environments just don't. These benefits don't necessarily come from intense physical activities many people do in the forest, such as hiking or mountain biking. Almost anyone can reap the rewards of a short sojourn to the woods. The Japanese call it shinrin-yoku, or forest bathing. Even 20 minutes in a forested space is enough to produce positive changes in the bodies. Why is this? The secrets lie in the plants themselves. For one reason, forests contain a higher concentration of oxygen than urban spaces do. I already mentioned the phytoncides. Those chemicals are natural oils that plants use to defend themselves against unwanted pests such as insects, bacteria, and fungi. And phytoncides improve the human immune system by increasing natural killer cell activities. The natural killer cells respond rapidly to virus-infected cells and tumor formation. Studies show that increased natural killer cell activity can last for more than 30 days after a trip to a forest, suggesting that a trip once a month would enable individuals to maintain a higher level of natural killer cell activity. Other benefits from phytoncides include increase in anti-cancer proteins, a reduction in blood pressure, heart rate, and stress hormones, reduced test scores for anxiety, depression, anger, fatigue, and confusion, and increased scores for vigor. So if you're wondering if you should go in the woods, the answer is yes. I just say make sure you're wearing spray to help prevent yourself from getting ticks. But 20 minutes in the woods once a month is going to make a difference in your health. We should make sure to do that. Okay, So let's see. I have one more, and that's the desert. Why the desert's good for you. And some people, so the desert can help you to breathe easier because there's going to be less plants that may irritate you, and there's not humidity to carry dust and pollen. And there tends to be less pollution, depending where you are, of course. It can improve your mobility. And if you have arthritis and osteoporosis, the heat and the sun can be helpful. And also you have less dampness if you tend to be prone to dampness. It can reduce stress. And even in larger cities like Phoenix and Las Vegas, there's a stress-reducing factor of the desert. And you get those beautiful vistas as well that can help you. You can do fun outdoor activities in the desert. There can be, if there's a lake, you can go hiking and boating and swimming and stuff. You can make more vitamin D because there's not a lot of cover for the sun. And it's going to be very sunny in the desert. And I will send people to the desert who, because people, for example, with chronic Lyme disease and other chronic illnesses who also have a problem with mold intolerance will tend to do better in the desert. And so I'll suggest to them, maybe you want to leave Connecticut, just go for a trip to the desert and see if you feel better. And one of the bits of information that we'll give you is if you feel a ton better when you're hanging out in the desert, you probably have mold intolerance. So then if you have to come live in Connecticut, you can decide if you want to continue to live in Connecticut and or if you want to continue to live in the Northeast, or just come back and treat your mold intolerance. So I think we're going to save the last two bits, why being near water, any kind of water is good for you, and why being outside is good for you in general. We're going to save that for next week. So the take-homes for the week, get outside. You can exercise outdoors and also just hang out there. You don't have to go far. If you live in the city, go to a park. I make us have chairs. When the weather's nice, we have chairs so we can just go sit outside anytime. If you have a yard, go there. That's what we do. If there's exercise you normally do inside your house, like yoga, and I'm probably going to do, if the weather's nice at 5:30, I'm going to take my yoga class outside. Stretching, resistance training, or dance, consider moving it outdoors. I love to do stretch and do yin yoga or any kind of yoga in the sun. You can take your phone, laptop, or tablet outdoors and do your class or any online video outside. And of course, you can sit and relax or read or just go for walks in nature or meditate. That's as close to home as possible. Consider vacations that include experiencing nature. Everyone has their favorite beach, mountains, lakes, deserts, woods, any kind of water. Find yours and go. All right. So how about if you write in with your questions? You can do that on radionaturopath@gmail.com or on my Facebook page at FranStorchND, or write in live where we're doing Facebook Live. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am FranStorchND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.